Well, here we go with Persiflage number 19. And the subheading this week says, Worth the Cover Price, July 26th, 2001. And this one is a little unusual because it appears to have a short poem at the beginning and then one longish short story followed by the quotations and then the classified. So no essay from Hubris this week. And you can either be excited about that or not. So here goes. A poem. Answering a muse of sorts. He spent his days like Bach, improvising on his organ and calling it art. Frank speaking. Quite short. And now the story, which appears to be by Charles Frederick Maynard. And it is entitled A Tale of Overpowering Lust. Simon was a young man and still subject to intense passions and a powerful lust that dragged him around by the... He was not happy about this and looked forward to the shriveling of those terrible dangling instruments that had so dominated his adult life. As he assumed this would happen to him sometime around the age of 40, which he considered rather advanced, he knew he must somehow navigate through another 15 years. 15 years during which he expected to be subjected to the fearful whims of his demanding gonads. In that time, he knew he would be wildly ecstatic for a few brief, fleeting moments, and monstrously unhappy for the rest. But what could he do? There were times when the insistent cries from the front of his pants were too loud to ignore. Actually, that was often, especially in the summer. In the summer, everyone wore less clothing. With the decrease in the number of layers, not only were the external stimuli greatly increased, but the murmurings from his pants were less muffled. One day it all became too much for him, and he decided that he must speak seriously to his insistent genitalia, or he would never make the 15 years to his expected testicular senescence. He addressed his, at this point, somewhat less than prized package. O spherical gentleman and your elongated servant, may I suppose to impose upon you at this time but for a moment? The three trouser-bound brethren mistook, perhaps through wishful thinking, this earnest summons and began their regular enthusiastic preparations. Simon felt with alarm the straining from within his shorts and quickly looked about to see if this most recent rising had raised the interest or curiosity of any passers-by. Thankfully, he was alone on his park bench. He turned his gaze once more downwards to his tormentors. Oh, no! Please refrain from your terrible ministrations. There is no need for tumescence at this time. I'm quite alone. Although he knew this was not necessarily a bar. The disappointed trio returned to their previously relaxed posture. Simon resumed. Gentlemen, I can take no more of this. Your demands on my attention are unreasonable. Your mindfulness of a piece has wrought havoc on my peace of mind. Surely this must stop. I can bear no more. Constantly I am light-headed from your misdirection of my blood, and my drooling and constant moaning is making me a pariah in all the social circles I would aspire to. You must restrain yourselves. The three conferenced quietly. They were considering his plea. To them, he seemed unreasonable. Did he have no idea of the intense pressure they were under? They knew only one way to decrease that pressure, and this was what he was trying to take away from them. They were, of course, somewhat resentful. Had they not been physically so close, conjoined, if you will, they might have, at this impasse, agreed to go their separate ways. Simon could have pursued his dream of the pure intellectual life, unsullied by the baser pleasures of the flesh, and his unit could have pursued its own darkly amusing goals. But they were undeniably connected, and so a compromise must be reached, or there would be no peace, or peace, for any of them. But what would it be? How would they reach an agreement? Simon suggested binding arbitration. At first, the trio shrank at the thought, being confused by the terminology. And tortured by visions of Chinese feet, they were sore afraid. Once he explained the true meaning of his words, they were agreeable. But who could they find to be their Solomon, although they all hoped for a non-Solomonic compromise? It was the left testicle who provided the solution. He had known a wise tanuki during his brief sojourn in the Orient, and given that badger's formidable physiognomy, he hoped that the wise fellow might be easily swayed in their favor. Simon, being on the whole ignorant of Japanese fertility lore, agreed. Mr. Yamamoto, for such was the venerable old badger's name, was at that time in town leading an origami workshop, and so was available for this strange consultation. Simon, when he first laid eyes on the proposed judge, and the rather amazing way in which he was physically assembled, felt his heart sink. Surely, any creature whose physical presence was so dominated by his own spectacular spherical appendages would side with his own, Simon's, somewhat less impressive cojones. But Mr. Yamamoto was a wise and kindly old badger who, appearances to the contrary, assigned to things their proper weight. The chosen judge sagely listened in silence to both sides of the issue. After all had finished stating their respective cases, a slow half-smile crept across his old badger face, and then he spoke. "You are vexed by an old problem. Many of the wise ones have struggled with it." He turned to Simon. "You wish to be freed from the demands of your body." Simon nodded, but secretly felt fear at the words "freed from." "And you," the old badger turned his attention to Simon's lap, "wish to give free rein to your impulses." There was a murmured assent from the front of Simon's cargo pants. "These goals are incompatible in these absolutes. We live in our bodies. The spiritual, the intellectual, and the physical are one. The needs of all are equal." He leaned back and smiled what was rapidly becoming quite an irritating half-smile. Simon was annoyed. The gonads were unsatisfied. All four parties, including the silent, unthinking one of the pants-bound group, were considering this tete-a-tete-a-tete a waste of time. "But what are we to do?" Simon half-shrieked. Mr. Yamamoto smiled again. "The answer is simple." "But what is it?" he cried in frustration. "You must have frequent and vigorous sexual congress, only with highly intelligent women of great spirituality." So that is what they did, and it worked out nicely. The end. C.F. Maynard. Well, I think the less said about that, the better. Now the quotations. Snippets of brilliance. "My dilemma: that deep realization will never come to my mind, the truth of which my mind realizes all too well." Saggio. "Nothing needs less justification than pleasures." Bertolt Brecht. "So long as your panties are hanging on the chandelier, I'll know that you still love me. Old Berlin nightclub song. Granted by you, the image of the god stands at the gentle crossroads under my clothes. Rainer Maria Rilke. Classified section. Take out an ad in Persiflage. Increase your market by 3 or 4 not very discerning individuals. Only $10, maximum 40 words. Lonely bachelor of indeterminate age seeks similar woman with a penchant for saddle soap. Object, rousing game of cowboy and schoolmarm. Reply to box 228. For sale, rare erotica, Pinsey's illustrated history of adult soothers. The Lonely Goatherd, Mr. Big's Adventure in Littletown, and others. Discretion assured, more or less. Reply to box 169. Will trade my badly misused wool socks for pretty much anything. Any offers welcome, really. Reply to box 44. Well, that's it. That's number 19. Next week, number 20. Goodbye.